Hello and welcome to the Real Geeks Holiday Spectacular, brought to you by Ovaltine. Guest starring Stanley Kubrick, two stunted child actors, the political minefield of Martian politics, the United States Central Air Command, consumerism as a general concept, Bender Bending Rodriguez, a gay stereotype, and the anarchistic chubby elf himself. This is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Santa sets up a fantastic automatic toy factory on Mars. The Martian leader battles the wicked Boldar in a desperate effort to save Santa, the wise man of Mars. 900 years old. The Battle of the Toys, when Martian kids and Earth kids join Santa to battle the bad guys of Mars. For real space age fun, you'll be out of this world when Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Huh. Had to get it all out there. There we go.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, I would like to note that I don't have a mute button. So I literally had to move my chair to the other side of the room so that I didn't laugh over that.
What can I say? This movie inspires me.
Oh, I can believe it.
Just as apparently it inspired a very young Matt Groening. Because, to begin with, this is clearly a favorite of so many, ever so many. And that includes myself, someone who watched it on the Space Network way back in the way days. And just as many Americans watched it on Comedy Central, this is a film that people forget about, then remember, then forget about, then remember. It comes and goes just when you need it, just like Santa Claus and just like enfranchisement on other planets. Yes, that's right. Santa's opening a KFC on Mars. this film is either like very lucky schlock or quite possibly one of the greatest satires of the 20th century. And I don't know what and which it is, and I'm I wouldn't be disappointed either way.
Yeah, I think right away we need to say thank you, Mystery Science Theater, because
they didn't do shit for me.
Well, apparently this movie fell into just utter obscurity, like the darkest bowels of film history.
Oh, really?
And then MST3K did an episode on it, which brought it back into film culture.
See, now that's interesting. Yeah, because I had read that, like, on random, like, local network accesses, it became almost like the anti- It's a Wonderful Life, where like we don't have the bigger stations playing It's a Wonderful Life. Both It's a Wonderful Life and this film are in the public domain, so it You don't have to pay no one nothing to see these films or to broadcast them. But usually, like, a channel would want to offer something different than their immediate competitor. So whoever gets to It's a Wonderful Life gets like 80% of the viewer share. And what are you left with? Well, you're not throwing out the fucking cash for Charlie Brown Christmas, I'm telling you now.
Nope.
nor the Grinch. Good Lord, no. So you end up running this, and apparently it was both popular that way and running in, like, theaters up until the 80s. So what I presume happened is, like, it was popular right up to, like, the mid-70s, and then until, like, the mid-80s, it vanished. Like, that transition period to VHS, so much was lost by simply not being, like, lumped into the new medium. And so when it eventually did come out, people remembered how much they loved this because, holy shit, what an incredible film. And the fact that the copies that are available on the public domain are in such fantastic quality really speaks to, like, I don't feel like this was lost. I think it just, you know, it went away for a while to rest and came back at its full power.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, like, I could totally see a scenario where we're both right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like, this is the kind of film that, like, either you know of it and you go, yes, or you're like, excuse me, pardon moi, and then you see it and go, oh my, because there is not a bad movie like it, because it is the most competent bad movie ever made. It has a wry wit that, if it's unintended, makes a lot of sense. Like, okay, you just took the premise so serious and straightforward for kids that all of this bounty of humor came out of it that, like, is above the heads of kids. Or, once again, it is possibly the smartest, most, like, efficient fucking children's script ever that is layers on layers of clever and witty. Immediately opening with, like, two Martian children emotionally stunted.
Yeah, yeah.
And one just goes, what was it say? What is tender loving care? And it's like, oh, okay, so that's how we're starting, is we? Okay, then.
Oh, no, no, no. I want to go literally to the start. I want to go straight to the fucking opening titles. Here's the thing.
You
were far more familiar with this movie than I was. Like, I knew it existed. I had heard the title, but for whatever reason, I just never sought it out to sit down and watch it. Needless to say, this was not the movie that I was expecting. And because when you hear the title, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, you're thinking some kind of 50s bug nuts insane, which is an awful lot of 50s movies if you really think about it. So, like, sci-fi action film that somehow involves Santa Claus actually invading Mars.
Yeah, you know, and then, it would be in black and white, include flying saucers, like legitimate flying saucers. There would be a giant ant. Don't ask why. There just always is. Go with the giant ant. If the giant ant is not present in your 50s horror film, it's not good enough. Throw that shit out. It's communist. Throw it out. Report it to the government.
And then I hit play. And I'm sitting there watching the opening titles and going, is this a Rankin Bass movie?
So, yeah. So how many films from, like, the early 60s do you watch? Because I apparently have watched far too many.
I would say you have definitely watched more than me. But I've seen things like, for example, Forbidden Planet.
Another classic that we'll have to get to at some point.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, ooh, so good.
Yeah. Like,
And a film that falls into the same realm as this one, in which, due to Leslie Nielsen's later characterization and portrayal of things, you can't watch Forbidden Planet and not find it fucking hilarious, because he's deadpan acting the whole time, but it's not meant for humor, but it becomes the funniest fucking Star Trek ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that at some point.
But there are a lot of classic films from that era that I wouldn't say that I've sought out.
Hmm.
But if the film came across my radar, or I somehow, for whatever reason, had the opportunity, I will happily sit down and check it out.
Yeah. And, like, there are so many great films. There's a lot of shit, though. I'm not gonna lie. There's a lot of shit. But that opening style, the title card with what you call, like, the rank of best, was very popular from the mid-50s onwards into the late 60s. And it's meant to... It's called the Technicolor Extravaganza, and it's to show off the theater's abilities to use Technicolor, like the actual product.
The correct term, and I'm reading this straight from the film poster.
Here it comes.
In space blazing color.
But the point of this is it's essentially like back when you'd go to a movie and the THX screen would come up and the audio would go.
Yeah.
That's what this is. It's like showing off. And that's why the color in this film is so vibrant. My favorite example of one of these kinds of opening title cards is another film we'll have to get to. And it's 1960, I want to say 4, maybe 5 again. Very, very early, maybe 67 at the latest, Casino Royale, starring Peter Sellers, David Niven, and Ursula Andress. It's fantastic. Oh, and Orson Welles. It's fan-fucking-tastic, and it goes all out, and it has the same energy as this, wherein that one's a little bit further down the well into psychedelia. This one is just at the edge of psychedelia, and I swear to God, this Santa Claus is the biggest goddamn hippie. He is, like, he is the Timothy Leary of pre-America Timothy Leary. He is a children's version of it, because he's such a fucking chaotic force. But in this, like, incessant happy hippie motif where, like, nothing gets him. This is a film where two children and Santa Claus get airlocked.
Like, yeah. At one point, Santa Claus actually, honest to God, goes, well, when Voldor accidentally left us in the airlock and then came up here and accidentally through the door
accidentally
switch, we knew we had to get out of there in a hurry, or that would have been the end of us. Of course.
What a beautiful passive aggressive bitch. But, like, you don't see this tremendous escape with the children. No. Voldor, who is he's a Klingon. He's a first generation Klingon. He thinks that he's pulled it off. Like, he's off screen. He counts down to zero. The hatch is flipped. And then his boss comes in the room and asks, you know, what's up? And he snidely goes, but, like, Santa Claus and these kids just appear. And they're not angry. They're not looking for vengeance. They just fucking laugh at him. They just, like, break his fucking soul laughing at him and being unkillable. This isn't Santa Claus. This is Tom fucking Bombadil.
Now, since you're, like, far more familiar with the film than I am, and folks, if you go to look this up on IMDb, this is the part you're going to want to pay attention to. I'm hoping you can help me out with something. Now, on IMDb, the movie is not listed as Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, or at least that's not the primary title it's listed under. It's listed under Dave's Quest. Who the fuck is Dave?
Yeah, I don't know. My presumption is that some, like, possibly the reason it's in public domain, because I tried to find why it's in the public domain. This should be owned by a company called ECL, who bought New Line, who bought Dino De Laurentiis, and Dino De Laurentiis bought the rights to this film and a bunch of other stuff from Jalor Productions and Embassy Pictures. Embassy Pictures are fantastic because they brought over, like, Godzilla King of the Monsters and a bunch of foreign films from Europe. Essentially, if you are a film nerd, I mean, like, an insufferable film nerd, you have Embassy Pictures, the people who distributed this movie, to thank. So, yeah, get down on your knees, motherfuckers. Yeah, I presume that has something to do with the rights fight, and so maybe that version is an attempt to get money for it, and what is released, like, copyright-free on the internet and everywhere else is not Dave's Quest. I have no fucking idea. That, I've never heard it called Dave's Quest before. Like, I've never seen Dave's Quest appear in the fucking film, you know? It doesn't track.
Yeah, no, there's no Dave in the cast list, like, anywhere.
No.
Not the director. Yeah, I would not assume the writers.
It is very much assumed that is as part of a copyright issue that led to this film being available to you, dear listener, and will be linked in the social media of this episode. I love this film for its straightforward logic when it comes to things. The United States military, the entire United States government, does not hesitate for one moment when Mrs. Claus, in her first cinematic appearance ever, by the way, when she testifies that aliens from Mars kidnapped Santa Claus, and so they respond by sending, I believe, a Gemini rocket, probably supposed to be like an early prototype Apollo rocket, trying to fucking get it. They fail, by the way. I was waiting this entire film, like, when I was a kid and again when I was older, having not seen it for so long, like, okay, maybe at some point, like, John Glenn appears with a handgun and it's just like, freeze. But he doesn't, and it's all I want. This is a film that is dying for to be added onto constantly. I want this film to be done on stage at high schools, by elementary schools. I want this to be remade by the cast of SNL for the last 25 years. Like, I want everyone who was in there to be in this. I want the robot played by Tracy Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Morgan, I, God damn it. Yes. Hey, the robot that is clearly just fucking Bender. It shows up. It grabs some kids, it fucks off and never appears again. Bender's off drinking. Don't worry about it.
It doesn't even do that. Remember, it shows up, it breaks into Santa's workshop, which, again, this is the Santa's workshop from any Rankin Bass special you like. And the elves just look at it and declare that it is a toy. They just decide it's a giant toy, and it becomes a giant toy.
First of all, their power, their magic is, like, terrifying, because they simply, like, can assert reality, apparently. So can Santa Claus. That's fascinating. Yeah, That's an interesting power. But like, first of all, they're unfazed. Second, I love one of them who just stands in front of this towering robot and is like, "Nah, you can't pass here." It's, wow, dude. You definitely, like, you got big fucking balls. And I love the cast in this, well, because they're all apparently stage actors.
One more point with the workshop. I do want to point out the simple fact. I think I know why the elves are unfazed. Because like two scenes before this invasion, one of the elves brings in a doll, and he says that it's a figure that he has created as a toy Martian that looks exactly like the Martians that later arrive. Again, mwah.
And like, okay, considering the fact that seemingly they can assert reality, then the creation of that toy and then the assertion that that is a Martian created the Martians, possibly their entire society, wholesale with its history intact. And so, like, they just popped into existence because someone on Santa Claus's production line had a fucking brain fart. And that's, it's like, it, this whole thing is a warning of, like, listen, when you're at Santa's workshop, be careful what you wish for is printed on the goddamn wall, because it's a work danger. It's a hazard, damn it.
It has been 0 days since our last accidental invasion.
I would love for that to be the truth. Yeah. Just like, we came up with another sweet toy. Okay, but is it gonna come and fuck our shit up? Listen, just because that happens every time I come up with a new sweet toy doesn't mean it's gonna happen this time when I come up with a new sweet toy. Okay, what's the sweet toy? I call him Killomaster. He kills. He's the master of killing. Hey, who's that at the door?
Candy Graham.
Like, in all seriousness, like, I am down for a remake of this movie, and apparently there's going to be one, or there are at least plans for there to be one, like, next year.
Now, to be fair, there's been plans to remake this every year, but seeing as how it would be ridiculously cheap and quick and easy to remake, you could pull it together in a week. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, but like, I don't want a sequel, is the only thing. Or, no, let me rephrase.
No sequel, has to be a remake.
Or just a spiritual successor. Because I would love to see this world, this world where everyone knows Santa Claus exists and are perfectly fine with the idea of Martians. I would like to see what that world looks like, but instead of the 60s, it's today.
That could be interesting. I want this to be redone live on TV the same way they do, like, the Christmas Carol and shit. I want to see fuck-ups. I want to see chorus, like, dancers panicking, trying to get to their spot in time for the camera to come to them.
Oh,
I demand clusterfucks of, like, Scrooged proportion.
Now, speaking as someone who has watched the recent live-action Grinch, who has seen the live-action Hook, or Peter Pan, or whatever name they use, with Christopher Walken, and I'm sorry, that man was drunk, as Hook.
I did not see that.
Oh, that needs to be witnessed.
Oh, dear.
Like, there's no way that that man did not take a shot of whiskey or something every time he came on stage. Like, so, having seen things like that.
To stay in character.
Having seen those events, and make no mistake, they are events. You're damn right I want a live stage production of this.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I love how intimately adaptable it is because of its already low production value. I'm pretty sure that's not even green makeup. It looks like fucking magic marker. Like, it's patchy as fuck. I love the stupid ass approach to this, where it's like, you assume the kids are kind of foolish, and it's like, no, the kids are straightforward. These adults are fucking morons. The villain has worked with this guy for like years, and he doesn't recognize him in a fat suit. Despite the fact that his skin is green and he's wearing a goddamn helmet.
Yeah, he's wearing a Martian helmet, and remember, this is 50s sci-fi, so we're talking a helmet with just whatever they could find glued onto it.
It's such a beautifully stupid design. I had to, now I knew in my heart of hearts, but I had to double check to make sure Marvin the Martian wasn't based on it. You look like an idiot.
I don't think that the timing works, but.
No, it does not by like decades, yeah, but yeah. The fun can be there. This is such a beautiful take. I love that, like, Martian society is weird. The children don't grow up. They just kind of like, it's so Vulcan. Apparently they just like, they learn and then their bodies get larger.
They're
warlike people who has.
It's not just Vulcan. Children being born and then having knowledge basically implanted while they're in learning pods. There's another iconic franchise. I've seen that approach somewhere before.
Okay, I never would have gone the Superman route, but you know, it's there. It is. There's a lot of like odd, like Richard Donner-esque elements to this, where it's just like, it's silly. Therefore,
yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't understand the logic of how this works. Well, it's funny, and I like it. Oh. Well, all right then. That makes complete sense, and I'm completely down with it. This is a film that finally answers the question, what does Santa Claus need with a spaceship?
Thank you so much for that.
This film uses parts of Dr. Strangelove. And by that, I mean, literally, it pulls from some of the same stock footage Dr. Strangelove, which is a Stanley Kubrick movie, uses in its opening credits. And to be clear, by the time it was used in this movie, Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove had already been out. I just love the fucking ballsiness of like, well, if it's good enough for Stan.
Oh, I have seen enough MST3K, and I've seen, I don't know if I quite want to say enough, but close to enough films in general from that era that you can tell where a particular film places in the pantheon of like 60s, 70s cinema. By the amount of stock footage that is used.
I just, I, for me, it's just, I love the fact that, like, That specific stock footage unites this with Dr. Fucking Strangelove. Like, technically, this could occur at the same time. And so, like, Santa and the kids come back and find the world obliterated in nuclear fire. Which is set off by the fucking Martians kidnapping him.
Oh my god. That's way too doable. Like, you can even crowbar the Bond franchise in there, because there is that brief moment where I think the newscaster for KID TV, which, as far as network names go, again, chef's kiss, mentions how, I think it's like the Americans are accusing the Russians of having something to do with the spaceship that they detected, but then lost. I know I've seen that exact moment in a Bond movie.
God, it's probably gonna be like Moonraker, isn't it? Oh no. Oh no.
if it wasn't Moonraker, it was somewhere in that period.
This definitely has the feel of a Roger Moore Bond film. Oh my god. Like,
you want
everything, and everything about it works.
Yeah.
No one's a good enough actor in this, but they're perfect for what they need. John Call, the guy who was Santa Claus, he's fucking perfect. Because he seems to be in, like, fucking unfazable. Yep.
No.
Like, a lot of Santa Clauses, modern Santa Clauses and such, have moments of doubt, like, to humanize them. This motherfucker might be, like, an elder god, because he doesn't give a shit.
Oh, I'm sorry. That man has been snorting candy cane dust. There's no way he's sober.
Yeah, like, what's in your pipe, old man?
Oh, and
angel wing dust. Excuse me? He's just sitting there, like, with a fucking gong going, bang, 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 bang. Yeah!
Now, I think in terms of connections to other franchises, we obviously have to acknowledge that how I was sitting on my couch watching it, and I'm like, so these aliens come to Earth to kidnap Santa, fuck up their arrival just enough to get spotted. If you switch Santa Claus with Kevin Bacon, James Gunn, you magnificent bastard.
And yeah, you know for a fact that James Gunn has seen this.
Oh, no doubt. Because, yeah. Like,
it reads. It reads. And yeah, Gunn has been very clear that, like, no, that the Guardian special is intentionally a throwback to those old Christmas specials and movies that were just oh so fucking improbable and cheesy. Like, the improbability of it is a part of the fun. And what's more improbable than aliens from Mars kidnapping Santa Claus? These are two things that sadly do not actually exist. And they go off and they have fun away from us.
Speaking of going,
microbes don't count.
Speaking of going off and having fun, we do also have the subplot of two children in a forest by themselves, encountering and alien visitors who take the children with them back to their home planet, where they have all these adventures. Eventually everything gets wrapped up. The children are gifted special belts from that alien planet before being returned to Earth. Wait, no, that was the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special.
I mean, also, yes. Everything comes from this. This is such an text. And maybe it's just because it managed to find the right balance of stupid and brilliant, creative and insane. I don't know. But it makes me want to watch it again. The last time I saw this film before seeing it for this review, I think I was 12, something like that. And it's like, you have a level of appreciation, but like, you're also a dumb fucking kid and you haven't seen much stuff relatively. I was a film nerd, but that's back when being a film nerd meant watching Boondock Saints.
Yeah, fair enough. And now you had mentioned earlier how most of this cast was like probably stage actors.
Yes. They were okay. Drawn mostly from stage actors.
I would like to take that one step further. I would suggest that the actors, the writers, the director, everyone who worked on this movie came from the stage.
You'd think so, but oddly enough, the writer-director of this was like a solid television man. He was like a guy who worked in 50s, 60s, and 70s television. And that was his bread and butter. A lot of people involved on like the higher level of this, the writers and such, they were television people, which is kind of where I think the speed, the tempo, and the cheapness comes from, because it has a lot more of the punchiness of a 60s sitcom than it does a 60s children's movie, which would not have punchiness. But this is like clever in the kind of way Gilligan's Island would be, where it's like, this entire fucking show is stupid, this entire premise is dumb, but that was a really fucking witty double entendre about coconuts the professor just made.
Well, to that I would submit that a TV producer would have used stock footage of a polar bear. A producer coming in from the stage would 1,000% put someone in a polar bear costume.
And not just a polar bear costume. A polar bear costume that kind of looks like a mascot costume. Yeah. And the minute I saw it, I could see the Wampa.
Yes!
I could see the Wampa. And it's like, George, did you watch this? I know you were a little bit older by then. I'm pretty sure you were going to film school a couple of years after this, but like, is this the Wampa?
The way that they filmed that polar bear, I refuse to live in a world where that was not the inspiration for the fucking Wampa.
Yeah, like, it. The same as how, like, yeah, there's a lot of generic robots, but like, that's Bender. That's fucking Bender. It's too, like, this is too much of a touch point and like a touchstone for it not to be. I can understand if you pulled the idea of some random crack anyway, but this is a fucking legendary, insane goddamn film. That's Bender. That's the Wampa.
Oh yeah, no, like that I'm sorry, that's not just Bender. That's the precursor to the robot from Lost in Space.
Does that work out time-wise?
That's a good question.
Because I do not believe it do.
Just. But like,
and I know that that one's based on Robbie, if I recall. So Robbie the robot, of course, from.
Oh, sorry.
It was the movie that you.
Yeah, no, I was just. I was literally just about to go. Oh, good old Forbidden Planet.
Good old Forbidden. Everything comes from Forbidden Planet, including all of Star Trek.
Oh, anyway. Yeah.
Like, quite literally. that's the thing. I don't know. Once you get past, like, singing this film's praises and pointing out your favorite idiotic moments, it's just kind of, like, warm and fuzzy, and there's not much, like, you could go off for pages and pages talking about how, like, Santa in this bemoans automation, and he's an intentional Luddite in the revolutionary sense. He intentionally overthrows a production line into chaos to shut down the system. He laments having to change his artisanal approach to consumerism into a produced, manufactured one at the lash of a fucking enslaver dictator. You could go on tons and tons about that. You could write reams and reams on how it's a commentary on the positivity during the New Man era of American capitalist consumerism and the then still new concept of franchising. Franchise. You could talk about how this is a comment on, in the sense of Reaganism, how politics truly would be, like, indecipherably small if we ran into a threat that was not of this earth and beyond our explanation, a la Watchmen and Alan Moore. But no. All I want is to see the further adventures of their incredibly stupid Martian Santa Claus.
Who, yeah, I'm sorry. Bill McCutcheon's Droppo is the prototypical adorable idiot.
And I am very, very fucking certain he is, especially in the name, outright stealing from the fucking Marx Brothers.
Oh, yeah, no, he has to be. Like, you have a group of villains where most of their interactions with each other, I'm sorry, that screams Three Stooges.
A lot of the villains, they're all like, they're vaudeville cliches. The main leader of the Martians is an upstanding, morally right father figure who has mistaken an idea and is moving forward in that strongly. He is incorrect, but you don't fight him because he is the father figure. And, like, he's the stable straight man that defines the universe on stage. And then you have your comical villain who is just like, he's almost sneering. He's almost snidely whiplash level evil.
He had a mustache, but somehow was not twirling it.
Yeah, exactly. You have your comic relief with Droppo, the positive comic relief.
Yeah.
And then you have your negative comic relief in the sense of the bad guy's henchman, who, oh my god, like, once again, they're vaudeville cliches. It's fantastic. I actually, watching one of them, I had to stop and check that it wasn't Marty Feldman.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
by this time, Marty was making better money than this movie. Which apparently, okay, so this was produced for $200,000 in 1964, which is still a very low budget.
Yeah.
But apparently it made fucking boatloads of money in the 60s by coming out in theaters again every year around Christmas. There is no figure as to how much it made, but that it was a financial success is unquestionable. And that's fucking hilarious.
Oh, it's hilarious, but I think it did come out at like just the right period in history where I'm going, yeah, if you put this out just at the right time of year, and we are talking Earth calendar of December, not the Martian calendar of September, which again,
I love the old guy who's just like, what time of the year is it? It's like, where the fuck is this old guy? Where'd Martian Yoda come from and then go to? Because he just like the robot, he fucks on off. Maybe they're off drinking. I don't know. Ask the guru, old man, what's the fuck is happening? Your children hate you. Let's not talk to the old man.
It's just so lovely how they have to make this pilgrimage to find this mysterious 800-year-old wise man who is not a part of the community in any way, who possibly know what was going on, and the best advice that he can give them is something that anyone watching this society for 5 minutes could have told them.
Oh, lousy smart weather.
I love this fucking film. And I'm going to reintroduce it into my annual Christmas watching cycle because it is too good. But I am going to put serious fucking thought behind finding a way to adapt this into something more. Apparently, there is a tongue-in-cheek novelization from 2005. I gotta find me.
Oh
that.
Yeah.
And it's from the perspective of the little girl Martian. And so it's kind of like a Christmas story where she is older and retelling her childhood memory of this Christmas.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's fucking amazing.
But she's like from the Mariner Valley, so she speaks like a valley girl. Some bad puns. I'm here for them.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians meets Clueless.
Meets A Christmas Story. Yeah. No, it's... Yeah. I gotta find me a fucking copy of that.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
If you have not been convinced already,
I just have one hope for this novel. That it goes a tiny little bit further than where the movie ends, so that we can find out how the hell Santa Claus is piloting a Martian spaceship by himself.
You just want him to run into a fucking xenomorph. just the sequel is totally like 80s noir techno thriller. He comes out of fucking cryostasis. And, like, the kids are already dead. There's an alien lurking. He's running around in his underwear with a flamethrower. It's violent. It's Violent Night meets Jason X meets aliens meets this shit.
If anyone who worked in the writer's room of Violent Night should just happen to be listening to this, look, I don't know about Crash, but I am perfectly happy to sign whatever is necessary to allow you to have this idea for free. I just want to see this on the screen.
Do not fuck me like the producers of Sharkano did. Because I fucking came up with that idea. They even fucking acknowledged it on Twitter. The bastards.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
But yeah, our next film will not be Christmas themed, unfortunately. We have run out of time.
Well, remember, there is one more Christmas property that we were, so help us God, going to do.
Ah. No, I've forgotten.
Because if there is any even like remote chance in hell of this happening, somehow, some way, we're getting out an episode from Muppet Family Christmas.
Ah, yes. Touché. Well, this episode's gonna land Christmas Eve morning, so hope you like lead into New Year's.
Hey, you know what? There's been at least one year in the past that I didn't consider Christmas finished until December, like, 28th, because it took me that long to get the opportunity to watch Muppet Family Christmas.
So watch out for December 28th, which is probably when actually the episode will land.
Look, it's us. We had to fuck up the schedule somehow.
We'll try to actually get it out before New Year's. But until then, we can be reached at the usual coordinates if any fucking Martians are trying to find us. You know where I am!
Oh, well, yeah, they've already been watching since, well, probably at least since this movie was made anyway, so. we would like to be able to welcome our future Martian overlords, and in order to make those proper arrangements, we can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com or at realgeekshfx, unless Elon Musk is a secret Martian agent, then who the hell knows. But I can be reached directly at the Merit Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Hive, or at themerittimelord@gmail.com.
And I can be found on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and Crash and Burn everywhere else. If you can't find me, I ain't there.
So simple yet so effective.
Ah, yes, yes. So good. Until next time, happy holidays and get your ass to Mars! Thank you.